Today is Wednesday, July 14th, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, thousands of Afghan civilians take up arms against the Taliban.
Local militia forces have joined the Afghan military to defend their region against the Taliban.
Plus, President Biden sounds alarm over voting restriction laws.
We're asking my Republican friends in Congress and states and cities and counties to stand up for God's sake and help prevent this concerted effort to undermine our election.
Also, the WHO says all COVID-approved vaccines prevent deaths. Our top story today is in Afghanistan. Thousands of residents in northern Afghanistan are joining the military in fighting the Taliban. This as the United States withdraws its troops and the insurgents gain more ground in some rural areas across the country. VOA's Abdul Bashir Ilgor has more from northern Afghanistan's Jozan province.
Clashes between the Afghan National Security Forces and the Taliban continue around northern Afghanistan's Jawzjan province. Local authorities say the fighting is within 30 kilometers of Jawzjan's capital, city of Sherbagan, which houses over half of the province's population. Local militia forces have joined the Afghan military to defend their region against the Taliban.
These Uzbeks are facing the Taliban, and our people should not worry. We will drive the enemy out of the village soon.
While the Taliban continue to press hard in rural areas, local Afghan National Army commanders in Sherbagan City say that the Taliban have taken casualties in recent days and assure the locals that they will defend the region.
The Afghan people need to know that the military will sacrifice their blood and not hand over ground to the enemy.
Meanwhile, city residents took to the streets in support of the military and say that they will take part in the fighting if the government allows it.
We will uphold the rule of law and territorial integrity, and we will stand by our soldiers and protect them.
Everyone, young and old, depends on us to defend our country. We support our brothers. We will not allow looters to loot our property.
The local government says it is working on a plan to send volunteers to the front.
We thank and support those who have united to defend Afghanistan.
The Taliban had not yet commented on the clashes in the outskirts of Sherbagan. For Abdul Bashir Ilgor in Sherbagan, Afghanistan, Miguel Amaya, VOA News.
Russia has warned the United States against deploying its troops in the former Soviet Central Asia nations following their withdrawal from Afghanistan, a senior diplomat said in remarks published on Tuesday. Russia's Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Rybakov said that Moscow conveyed the message to Washington during Russian President Vladimir Putin's summit with U.S. President Joe Biden in Geneva last month. The warning comes as the U.S. military said last week that 90% of the withdrawal of U.S. troops and equipment from Afghanistan are complete. Biden said the U.S. military mission in Afghanistan will conclude on August 31st. On Monday, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov emphasized that Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and Tajikistan are all members of the Collective Security Treaty Organization, and any presence of foreign troops on their territories must be endorsed by the Security Pact. The UN Refugee Agency warns Afghanistan is on the brink of another humanitarian crisis as escalating conflict is causing civilian casualties to rise and is driving hundreds of thousands of people to flee their homes. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
More than 3.5 million people currently are displaced inside Afghanistan. Among them are an estimated 270,000 who have become newly displaced since the beginning of the year due to worsening security in the country. The UN Assistance Mission in Afghanistan reports civilian casualties have risen 29% during the first quarter of this year compared to last. This increase corresponds with the U.S. troop withdrawal from the country. In addition to ongoing fighting, UN Refugee Agency spokesman Baba Baluch says many displaced people report fleeing because of harassment and extortion by armed groups, as well as lack of social services and loss of income due to rising insecurity.
Our concern is if this does not stop, people may be further numbers may be forced to seek safety inside the countries, but there's a potential risk that they may have to seek safety not even in the immediate neighboring countries but beyond as well.
Baluch notes Iran and Pakistan host nearly 90% of more than 2 million registered Afghan refugees. He says the generosity and hospitality of these countries should not be taken for granted, as they have their own problems of development. The Taliban have been rapidly retaking land across Afghanistan as the U.S. troop withdrawal accelerates. On Friday, the rebel group claimed to be in control of 85% of Afghanistan after seizing key border crossings with Iran and Turkmenistan. Baluch says Afghan women are particularly fearful of losing the many gains they have made over the past 20 years if the Taliban come to power.
Women who finally found the space to breathe in Afghanistan, they're anxious, they're worried, and probably they're angry as well. They want peace and stability for their country. They don't want to go back to an era when there's no freedom for them.
Baluch says an examination of casualty figures shows an increasing proportion of women and children are victims of targeted killings. He says women activists and women journalists are at particular risk. The UNHCR is urging the international community to step up support to the government and people of Afghanistan at this critical time. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
U.S. President Joe Biden was in Philadelphia Tuesday to urge the passing of voting rights legislation that has stalled in Congress, but he did not outline a path to overcome Republican opposition. The speech came as Republicans in state legislatures sought to pass measures restricting access to voting. White House correspondent Patsy Widas-Kuwara has this report.
Philadelphia, Pennsylvania is the birthplace of American democracy, with landmarks such as the Liberty Bell, which celebrates the Declaration of Independence. On Tuesday, the city became a backdrop for President Joe Biden as he revived his push to secure voting rights.
We'll be asking my Republican friends in Congress and states and cities and counties to stand up for God's sake and help prevent this concerted effort to undermine our election and the sacred right to vote. Have you no shame?
Biden called on Democrats to unite and fight, but did not outline a new strategy to advance a federal bill that would expand access to voting nationwide. The bill was blocked by Republicans in June.
The motion is not agreed to.
States, not the federal government, determine how Americans can vote and how votes are counted. This year, at least 17 states with Republican majority legislators have passed laws that Democrats say will make it harder for people, particularly minorities, to participate in elections. On Monday, Democratic lawmakers walked out of the Texas legislative session during discussion of a voting restrictions bill. Democratic Texas State Representative Chris Turner.
The nationwide Republican vote suppression efforts, anti-voter efforts, is coming to a crisis point in the state of Texas right now.
Republicans say the laws are designed to eliminate voter fraud. Republican U.S. Senator John Cornyn of Texas.
It's disingenuous and downright false to claim that any effort to prevent fraud is a veiled attempt at voter suppression.
Voting rights have become a source of intense partisan divide. A recent Monmouth University poll showed 32% of respondents believe Biden won only due to voter fraud, despite no evidence. David Schultz is a professor of election law at the University of Minnesota Law School.
What's really driving it especially is what? Donald Trump. You know, Donald Trump's claim, going back to even 2016, when he said if he didn't win the election, it would be because of voter fraud. He made the same arguments before 2020 election, after. So a lot of it is being driven by Donald Trump, but his base and the Republican base at this point likes this argument.
An argument that Biden called out.
The big lie is just that, a big lie.
Claims by former President Donald Trump
We will stop the steal.
And Trump supporters that Biden stole the 2020 election led to the siege on the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
The World Food Program is calling for greater access to Ethiopia's war-torn northern province of Tigray, noting that a convoy of food aid that reached the capital Mekelle on Monday is not enough to meet growing needs. Lisa Schlein again reports for VOA from Geneva.
The convoy of 50 trucks laden with 900 tons of food and other emergency supplies is the first to reach Tigray since the World Food Program restarted its humanitarian operation there nearly 2 weeks ago. The WFP says the food commodities transported to the region are enough to feed 200,000 people for a week. Agency spokesman Thompson Feary says that is not enough. He says the amount delivered falls far short for the nearly 4 million people who need emergency food aid in Tigray.
The food stocks and other emergency items just delivered and badly needed by the communities in Tigray will run out. And we need regular and fast deliveries into the region. We need 100 trucks to be moving in on any given day for half the time we are to reverse the catastrophic humanitarian situation in the region.
The latest UN food assessment finds more than 400,000 people in Tigray are starving, and another 1.8 million are on the verge of famine. Ethiopian government troops invaded the province November 4th in response to an attack on one of its military bases by the Tigray People's Liberation Front. The federal government declared a unilateral ceasefire June 28th. Tigrayan forces quickly seized control of Mekelle soon after. Feary says the trucks must start moving toward Tigray immediately, given the long, difficult journey ahead. He says it takes 4 days to travel just 445 kilometers from the town of Semera to Mekelle.
WFP is extremely concerned with the pace of the response and capacity, as both food and fuel stocks are very low and may impact our ability to mount an effective response. At this rate, WFP cannot hope to scale up to reach over 2 million people in need of food assistance in Tigray.
The WFP is calling for greater access to Tigray and for more money. The UN Food Agency says it needs $176 million to continue to scale up its life-saving support to people in Tigray until the end of the year. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
U.S. officials say an Iranian intelligence officer and three alleged members of an Iranian intelligence network have been charged with plotting to lure a U.S. journalist and human rights activist from New York to Iran. An indictment in a New York federal court unveiled on Tuesday alleges that the plot was part of a plan to lure three individuals in Canada and a fifth person in the United Kingdom to Iran. The plot also targeted victims in the United Arab Emirates, authorities said. The identities of the alleged victims were not released. According to the indictment, all of the targeted individuals had been critical of Iran, including The New Yorker, a Brooklyn resident described as a journalist, author, and human rights activist who has publicized the government of Iran's human rights abuses. One of the suspects has been detained in the state of California, but the others are not believed to be in the United States. This is the Voice of America. Iran's outgoing president says his country could enrich uranium at weapons-grade levels of 90% if it chose to, though it still wants to save its tattered nuclear deal with world powers. President Hassan Rouhani's comments carried Wednesday by the state-run IRNA news agency came as he also criticized Iran's religious leadership for not allowing his government to reach a deal soon to restore the 2015 atomic accord. At least 13 people, including 9 Chinese nationals and 2 Pakistani soldiers, were killed after a blast sent a bus plunging into a ravine in a remote region of northern Pakistan on Wednesday. More than 30 people were injured. News reports said it was not immediately clear whether the blast was a result of a bomb or a mechanical problem with the bus. China has asked Pakistan to thoroughly investigate the crash, which happened as the bus carried workers to a hydroelectric project. Beijing condemned the blast, expressed condolences, and asked Pakistan to protect the safety of Chinese personnel, institutions, and projects. Foreign Ministry spokesperson Zhao Liyan said at a news briefing. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu for broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Armored personnel carriers rolled down South African highways on Tuesday as the military was deployed to contain looting and violence that was triggered by the jailing of former President Jacob Zuma. But over the past several days, the riots have been fueled by grievances over the state of the economy. David Doyle of Reuters has more.
Looters continued to ransack shopping malls and protesters clashed with police in several areas of South Africa on Tuesday. Violence triggered by the jailing of former President Jacob Zuma has evolved into an outpouring of anger over persistent poverty and inequality 27 years after the end of apartheid. Outnumbered police have appeared helpless to prevent attacks and the looting of businesses in Zuma's home province, KwaZulu-Natal, and Gauteng, where South Africa's biggest city, Johannesburg, is located. That's why the military was heading for flashpoints on Tuesday, and columns of armoured personnel carriers could be seen rolling down the highways. Police Minister Becky Kelly said the situation would not be allowed to deteriorate further.
We have instructed the law enforcement agencies to double their efforts to stop the violence and to increase deployment on the ground.
He said 757 people had been arrested so far and put the official death toll at 10, though according to state and provincial authorities, it's at least 30. The deteriorating situation points to wider problems and unfilled expectations that followed the end of white minority rule in 1994. A gulf between the haves and the have-nots has been widened amid the global health crisis. Restrictions have been repeatedly imposed on businesses, and in the first 3 months of the year, unemployment hit a new record high of 32.6%. On Monday night, President Cyril Ramaphosa warned that the unrest was only making matters worse.
We will soon be facing a huge risk of food insecurity and medication insecurity in a few weeks.
Zuma was sentenced to 15 months in prison for defying a constitutional court order to give evidence at an inquiry. It's investigating high-level corruption during his 9 years in office. Any confrontation with soldiers risks fueling charges by Zuma and his supporters that they are victims of a politically motivated crackdown.
That's David Doyle of Reuters. Seven COVID-19 vaccines have received the green light from the World Health Organization so far, and as new variants of the coronavirus evolve, questions arise about how well each vaccine works. It can get confusing, but as VOA Steve Baragona reports, when it comes to keeping people out of the hospital and the grave, any shot will help.
With the Delta variant surging, reports show even some vaccinated people are getting infected with the COVID-19 virus. But those infections are mostly mild. All the vaccines are still working by the most important measure, experts say.
They're very effective in doing what we want them to do, which is protect people from serious illness and death.
A rash of infections in Israel raised concerns recently that some vaccines are weaker against the Delta variant. But Powderly tells VOA the shots are preventing the worst cases, as a surge in his home state of Missouri is showing.
They are seeing infections just like the Israelis saw in people who are vaccinated, but they're not seeing anybody coming into the hospital. All of their hospitalizations and, unfortunately, all of their deaths are in people who have not been vaccinated.
Some of the shots are better than others at priming the immune system. The mRNA vaccines from Moderna and Pfizer generally seem to produce the most antibodies, followed by the viral vector vaccines, Johnson & Johnson, the Oxford University AstraZeneca vaccine, and Russia's Sputnik V. The inactivated virus vaccines from China's Sinovac and Sinopharm are on the lower end of the scale. All of them produce enough antibodies to fight the original strain, but antibody levels start to matter more against the variants, experts say.
Maybe with the slightly less powerful vaccines, which aren't inducing quite such a strong immune response, the Delta agent is starting to break through, still maintaining some protection against the more severe end of disease. But, you know, it's clearly a sort of sliding scale now.
And the Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, J&J, and Sputnik V vaccines all seem to be better than Sinopharm and Sinovac at activating the body's second line of defense, called T cells.
A backup immune response, like a T cell response, are going to provide a better protection against diverse variants, viral variants, than an inactivated vaccine that only induces antibodies.
Still, Fuller says, the Sinopharm and Sinovac shots are much like the annual flu shot. Not perfect, but better than nothing, despite the complaints she hears every year.
I hear somebody gets a vaccine, they say, well, I'm never going to take it again because I got sick anyway. And my response is always this, is that, you know what, you would have been a lot sicker potentially in the hospital if you hadn't gotten the vaccine.
And she says all the shots help slow the spread of the virus, which means fewer chances for dangerous variants to evolve. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
The Tokyo Olympics don't begin until later this month. But because of the COVID-19 restrictions, some media outlets are already labeling the games the, quote, no fun Olympics, unquote. VOA's Bill Gallo looks at how the pandemic restrictions pose a unique challenge for Olympic athletes.
Courtney Frerichs will soon face off in Tokyo against some of the world's fastest runners. But like every athlete preparing for the Summer Olympics, her focus is not only on competition. Frerichs, a middle distance runner from the United States, is also spending the final days of training, making sure she complies with the elaborate set of pandemic rules.
We've just been trying to reread over the protocols and everything to make sure that we're, you know, checking all of our boxes and getting all the stuff done. And then, you know, on top of that, you know, understanding, you know, what are the rules of contact tracing. And yeah, it's a lot.
Frerichs spoke to VOA in a recent phone call between training sessions in Portland, Oregon. She's quick to point out she understands why the rules are necessary.
It's a pretty serious matter, like that we're still in this, you know, a global pandemic. It certainly is, adds another level of stress to everything.
The official rules for athletes are laid out in a 70-page playbook, which basically reads like a gigantic bummer. One section warns you should eat alone as much as possible. Another says you must not walk around the city. Hugs, high fives, and handshakes, all forbidden. Alcohol isn't allowed either, unless athletes consume it inside their rooms. Athletes must also submit a detailed activity plan explaining where they will be at every moment of every day. Once an athlete's competitions are done, they must leave Japan within 48 hours. But like many athletes, she says she's grateful the Olympics are happening at all. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
A report by a nonprofit group says Africa needs to increase internet access to boost its economies, especially in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. The advocacy group found that while Africa's locally routed online traffic has increased, only 1 in 5 Africans have internet access. High taxes and frequent internet shutdowns by some African governments have also discouraged online trade, as Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
The Internet Society Group says in a report this month, Africa's Internet Exchange Points, or IXPs, have increased from 19 to 46 in under 8 years. 6 countries have more than one IXP. An IXP is where multiple networks and service providers exchange internet traffic. The increase is significant because a decade ago, most African countries routed their online traffic outside the continent. Dawit Bekele is the Africa Regional Vice President for the Internet Society, a global non-profit organization that promotes the development and use of the Internet. He says Africa having its own IXPs improves Internet performance for users on the continent.
By developing Internet exchange points within Africa, we have limited this kind of unnecessary travel of the Internet traffic outside of Africa to come back to Africa, which has considerable advantage in improving the user experience, be it with the speed of connectivity or even the cost of connectivity.
The Washington-based group says its goal is to eventually have 80% of internet traffic in Africa be exchanged locally. Michael Nyi Tejeka, an information technology expert, says public demand has forced African governments to improve internet access. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Afua in Washington. Thank you so much for listening and have a great evening.